This is Fresh Air. I'm Renee Montaigne. This weekend marks the 25th anniversary of the fall of Saigon to communist forces and the end of the Vietnam War. In those final chaotic days, the U.S. mounted Operation Babylift to bring out orphans. Many were the offspring of American or South Vietnamese soldiers. Others were abandoned because they were born sick or disabled. In a few minutes, we'll meet two of those babies, now grown up. My first guest is Sister Mary Nell Gage. She just returned from a trip back to Vietnam with a group of the orphans from Operation Babylift. Sister Mary Nell first went to Vietnam in 1973. 2 years later, she returned to the U.S. to raise funds for the orphans, and in April of 1975, while she was still in the States, the Viet Cong unexpectedly swept south towards Saigon. Vietnamese who had worked with the Americans were desperate to get out. Sister Mary Nell says the nurses and caretakers who cared for the babies were in a panic.
Coupled with the idea that there simply were not the number of commercial aircraft coming in and going out with seats, nor did we have escorts by the old rules, 5 children per escort for Air France and 3 children per escort for Pan Am, and there just wasn't any way that we were going to be able to get 400 children out like that. And so then what did you do? And you certainly can't go off and leave them.
I can understand the panic of the people who had worked with you in the orphanages, because in a sense they had collaborated,
exactly,
if you wanted to look at it like that, with the enemy. So as the North Vietnamese came down, they would be very vulnerable. But what these little babies, wouldn't they have been embraced by the larger Vietnamese society or the government? I mean, they wouldn't they have been viewed as innocent?
Probably full Vietnamese would, but in view of the rumors that were rampant about persons, as you say, collaborating, then anyone who was mixed race would surely be a target. At least that was the thinking at that time. But really, more than that, you cannot walk away and leave a 4-month-old child in a crib uncared for. I mean, that's just marking the child for death.
Mm.
And there simply weren't enough people who were saying, oh, I want to take this child or these children or all the 33 children in this room home with me. They were panicked for their own situation. What's going to happen? How will I survive? Much less thinking about trying to take care of an armload or a roomload of babies.
There you were. The normal rules didn't apply. You couldn't have just put these babies on Pan American airline flights out. Everyone was taken by surprise by the situation. What then did happen?
Then one of our staff members began negotiating with Ed Daly, the president of World Airways at that time, about chartering aircraft in order to move children en masse. And at the same time, working with the government of South Vietnam to obtain a laissez-passer so that those children who did not yet have a Vietnamese passport and exit visa could depart legally. So, those two things were happening simultaneously, and also then on the West Coast, one of the women who had volunteered with us for years to receive children as they arrived on the West Coast was negotiating to try to find a situation in which the children then could come before they would be moved to adoptive parents.
Did the panic increase? I mean, you wouldn't have known that Saigon was going to fall on the 29th, but did you know?
No way, absolutely, because I remember talking to our sister Susan Carroll, who was still there, and families had called asking about their particular children, and I was asking about those children, and some of them were in hospital there in Saigon, and Susan saying, and still I have chills all over my body when she said, if we have time to stop and get them, we will. And so you know, it's like that became very real to me, that if they can depart and if they have an opportunity to stop at the hospital and pick up the child will come. But it was totally an unknown throughout the month of April, really.
Right. Did children get left behind?
No. Not from all of the children under our care departed, who were adoptable, huh? And there were some children whose welfare we entrusted to some Vietnamese sisters, only a very few, but those who would be staying, and children whose who would not have been able to be adoptable stayed, but those were very few.
Mm. There was a terrible moment right in the middle of all of this when a plane filled with babies crashed.
That's the C-5A.
Uh-huh. I'll let you just tell us that if you wouldn't mind.
Well, the aircraft had come in carrying military equipment for the South Vietnamese military, and then had also brought, my understanding is, that had brought some volunteer dependents from Clark in the Philippines to Saigon to serve as escorts for the large number of orphans who would be leaving Vietnam. And we had just a matter of a few hours' notice when USAID called and informed our director that the C-5 would be arriving and that it was authorized for 300 children and the buses would be coming at X time to pick up the children. And so, you know, quick organization was required in order to get the children and the formula and the clothes and so on together. Plus, we were using that opportunity to send one of our chief staff members with documents for a large number of children in the facilities out. And so Margaret left with folders of papers, and children were transported out to Tansanut and loaded onto the aircraft. Older children in the cargo bay area, particularly because there was no support for babies who could not sit up alone, and the babies up in the area behind the cockpit that had a number of seats with seat belts.
Hmm. But that plane crashed and about 100 children were killed.
76 of our children died, and 6 of our staff.
Huh.
We had lost staff who were our friends, who were our loved ones, who were so terribly capable. We lost these babies for whom we had had great hope and great love. And then, of course, you know, from a very practical standpoint, the documents for children who survived, as well as those children who were killed, were also destroyed. So from that standpoint, a very tremendous setback. In fact, you know, I suppose people from the outside who were looking at us, you know, really like walking zombies, we really could not absorb the shock and the horror and the sadness.
My guest is Sister Marinelle Gage. We'll be back after a short break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Sister Marinelle Gage. 25 years ago, she worked on Operation Baby Lift to get Vietnamese babies out of then Saigon. Earlier this month, she took a group of those kids back for a visit. Why, Sister Marinelle Gage, did you all decide to begin taking these young people back now in this last couple of years?
Within the last about 10 years, many of the young people have begun asking questions about their background. What happened to me? Where was I? What was it like? Who cared for me? And so we can do that in a setting here in terms of describing to them about what the time was like and their orphanages and their nurseries and the street scenes and so on. But then when it becomes possible for them to actually stand there on the steps of their nursery or walk through the rooms of their orphanage or go to the hospital and actually go into the delivery room where they were born, it's an opportunity for them to come as close to their birth as possible and to smell the smells and feel the air and see the people where they were. I think that that's very important in their coming to terms with who they are and the experience out of which they were born.
Hmm. Two of those children who were taken out of Vietnam and adopted here in America through Operation Baby Lift are with us. Zachary Hill is in Atlanta. Fredo Seek is in Boston. Hello.
Hello. Well, how are you doing?
Hi. You both have just returned from, now, was it your first trip, both of you, your first trips to Vietnam?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, it was.
Okay. Now, I'm just going to just avoid confusion here. I'm going to start with Zachary Hill. As I understand it, you knew a fair amount about at least your history in the sense of your parents have been telling you about the fact that you were brought out of Vietnam for a very long time.
That's right. Basically, my mom and dad, my adoptive parents, had always told me that I was adopted, and they were never hesitant about answering questions that I may have had about maybe why I look different and why I might be a little bit different than most of the other kids that I grew up with.
What have you been able to piece together about your story? How much did your adoptive parents know when they got you, and then what did you find out later?
Basically, what they knew about me was I was dropped off at the hospital by an elderly woman, and that's about it.
At the hospital in Saigon?
Yes, ma'am.
And so they didn't know when you were born, exactly.
Right.
What did they decide? You must have looked like you were, like, what,
well,
6 months old
or
something?
Well, the nuns basically tried to make the best estimate that they could about all the children that they did not know the actual birth date. Mm-hmm. So that's about how it worked.
Yeah. And Fredo Seek in Boston, how much did you know about, you know, yourself, as it were? How much did your adoptive parents, what were they given when they got you?
They weren't given a whole lot as well. They basically didn't have a whole lot of information about my past and how I became an orphan and this and that.
Did they talk to you much when you were a small child about Vietnam?
They did. It's kind of funny. My parents, it wasn't a secret that I was adopted. My parents always tried to give me a lot of information about my heritage, but I kind of turned away from it. I was pretty much content on who I was as a Vietnamese American, being brought up within an American family, that I wasn't really too interested in knowing about my heritage.
So when you went back on this return with Sister Marinelle Gage, what were your expectations? I mean, how excited were you? How much did you think you might find someone who knew you? Fredo?
My expectations when I was going back, I was very excited. I wasn't expecting to find a lost family member, but my expectations of finding out who I was as a person and my heritage were very high.
And Zachary Hill?
I really didn't get started getting excited until about the day I left, because it really never hit me about the significance of the trip and what I might be experiencing. As far as meeting maybe family that comes out of the woods and say, oh, hey, here I am, I never really had that expectation either. I just basically wanted to see where I came from and what it would be like if I were still there. And I did get that opportunity, and I'm very fortunate that I had that that to do.
Uh-huh. Well, I know some children in this return were able to, some young people in this return were able to meet maybe the caretaker, someone who had, not necessarily family, but someone who had taken care of them and could say, oh, I remember you as a baby.
Yes.
Did that happen to either of you?
This is Zach. Yes, it did. We were standing outside of the hotel at the first or second night we had arrived, and Mary Nell comes running outside and says, Zach, come in. The caretakers who actually took care of you are in the lobby. So that, to me, was the closest thing to family that I could find. And they looked at me, and instantly they would recognize you, because we had our baby pictures out, and they would recognize us and talk to us and tell us a little bit about what we were like as babies.
And what were you like?
they obnoxious like now, but they said that I was the sick one, that I was the one whose chances may have been very iffy. Very ill.
And what was the look on the face of these, what would it have been, a woman caretaker? Or, you know, when she realized you had survived and thrived?
It was basically a look of inspiration, a look of awe. Because it wasn't just one, there were three of them that were there. So it was like they had accomplished something, they had helped me and several other children they basically gave us another second chance in life, and it's a very gratifying look that they gave me.
Fredo Sieg, you almost didn't make it either, and you were in that plane crash.
Right.
Did you know that?
My parents had told me that, yes, and they... My parents kept a scrapbook of the crash. Like I said, they tried to let me in on as much heritage as they knew about me, but it just seemed that I wasn't interested until I was able to go on this trip, until it actually hit me.
And when did it hit you?
Probably at the crash site, at the actual crash site that we went to for the memorial. That's when it became pretty much real that I was... I was a lucky one, fortunate one.
Huh. It's kind of easy to say, oh, did it change you? But did it?
I think it did. It's helped me become more aware of who I am as a person. And just the whole site itself, just being there, actually realizing that I could have been one of the unfortunate ones, and you know, it was very touching for me. It was very moving.
Well, I'm going to just turn to Sister Mary Nell Gage. I just want to finish by asking you briefly. This is the 25th anniversary, obviously, of the end of the war. This is your third trip back, but what to you sticks out? I mean, in the end, about this trip with these kids or young people?
You know, as I listen to Zach and Fredo, I'm just so moved by the fact that that trip is so meaningful to them, and that their experiences are so deep. And some of the memories that I have of the trip that they recall also, it just really sends chills up and down my spine. But I pass out an evaluation on the airplane coming back, and one of the young men wrote, the question is, what was most significant from this trip for you? And he wrote, a chance to be with my brothers and sisters. And when he was talking about that with me on the airplane ride back, it's brothers and sisters from both continents. It's those people with whom he shared bottles and diapers and beds, and those people with whom he shares a native country. And I thought, wow, this is so important.
Sister Mary Nell Gage, is there anything you want to say to either Zachary Hill or Fredo Sieck?
You know, when Zach was talking, I was hoping that he was going to recall. When he came to us, our nursery was full, and we kept about 15 or so babies in a hospital called Clinique St. Paul, and we took him there this trip. You know, Zach is an oculist, and that hospital is now a hospital for eye problems. And he was so struck by, my gosh, this is where now I've come full circle. And that was meaningful to me that day.
Zach, could you hear that?
Yes, I did.
And?
And, well, it was very neat. But at first, when I walked into this hospital, I didn't know it was an eye surgery clinic. And I'm an optician now here in Atlanta. And, it's kind of made the whole world seem a little bit smaller.
Yeah, like fate or something.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Well, thank you all very much for joining us today.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
I've been talking with Sister Mary Nell Gage, Fredo Sieck, and Zachary Hill. This is the 25th anniversary of Operation Baby Lift, taking babies out of Vietnam at the end of the war. I'm Renee Montaigne. This is Fresh Air.